Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. And before we begin, I just want to give a reminder. You can follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show and on Facebook at the 51%. Ever since she was a little girl, native New Yorker and devout Muslim Nyla Limus knew fashion was her calling. Self-taught, Limus, a clothing and accessory designer, started her own label, Amira Creations, in 2004. Limus told NPR in a 2011 interview that her inspiration comes from the 1920s to the 50s, and in her words, her dresses have a lot of flow, a lot of poof, and there are a lot of very playful kinds of pieces. Nyla works hard to shatter stereotypes about Muslim women, that they're docile and wear only black. Then last year, during New York Fashion Week, Limus launched Under Wraps, the first ever female Muslim modeling agency. Its aim? To match modesty-minded models, Muslim and non-Muslim, with designers. Limus says Under Wraps shows models can be beautiful, stylish, and still adhere to their religious beliefs while working with mainstream designers. That means no tight clothing, exposed cleavage, skin can't be shown except for the hands, feet, and face. A model's hair must also be covered, but the hijabs can make fashion statements, and Limus has seen to that, working her designs into the head coverings. To say I'm excited to be talking to Nyla today would be a huge understatement, so thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. That was well said. Appreciate it.
So here's my first question to you, Nyla. Yes. Were you always somebody who pushed the envelope?
I have always been someone who's pushed the envelope from a very young age. I grew up in a household where both parents were very creative. Both of my parents sewed. I've always covered. So they would make our hijabs, you know, my sisters and myself, and our outfits and, you know, add on trimmings. We used to go to the fabric store and pick out different things. And I was always a little more avant-garde with, like, my style and the things that I chose. But from a very young age, I was covering my hair. From maybe the age of five, my parents introduced it to me so that it wasn't such a hard adjustment as I got older. Because Islamically, we're not obligated to cover our hair as women until we reach puberty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but sometimes when you don't do it early, it could be a little harsh. But when I was younger, they allowed me to find creative ways to cover my hair. So from a young age, I always embraced wearing hijab and being covered and being modest. I think also because I came from a creative household where they made it more fun and exciting and it
was encouraging.
Exactly. And encouraging. And being around other friends who had like-minded parents and they were like-minded as well and being creative. And we would take cosmetology classes and things like that. Although we couldn't show our hair, we learned how to do hair and do funky things with our hair under our scarf. So, you know, those things were helped me continue to thrive and be creative.
So here you are, creative for yourself.
Yes.
And then obviously you moved into an area where you were going to create for others. Talk about that.
I started doing some things for children because when I was younger, I used to make clothing for, like, my dolls and things of that nature. And I just thought maybe jumping straight to adults may be a little complicated. So let's go to, like, the in-between sizing, which is
But you did this
children.
On your own?
I mean,
did you go to school?
I'm self-taught when it comes to to being a seamstress and creating my own pieces. And I never watched my parents sew either, because sometimes when I say I'm self-taught, they're like, well, you came from a household where both parents sewed. Maybe you sat there and you studied them on the sewing machine. I was busy playing. Like, I wasn't even studying what they were doing. But I just decided to get on the sewing machine one time and, you know, try it out, do some straight stitches, attempt some zigzags. And I also do silhouettes that are not extremely complicated. I like to do and for children's clothes, I used to make, like, sheet dresses and different things that are a little more simple, but I would embellish them where it was more fancified for children.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never anything tight or leggings or anything like that. You know,
but only for girls.
Only for girls. And it was very, like, flowy peasant tops, things like that, that the silhouettes were not that difficult to do, but I would just add more things that made it more appealing to children. And in doing that, I wouldn't say that I dress like a child, but I'm attracted to things that children may be attracted to, you know, like they like to dress up. I like to dress up. Mm-hmm. I like to wear bright colors, you know, things of that nature. And I wanted to find a way to merge the ideas that I had from, like, the children's design into something for an adult, you know, that's suitable for a mature individual, but can still embrace color, still embrace print and things of that nature. And you see it in this industry, but I really, like, focus on it a lot, that, like, all of my lines have some bold print or tapestry or something that's not the norm that you would use. But I'm trying to always think outside the box and, you know, challenge myself with pieces that I design.
But so where are you? In your bedroom with a sewing machine, you know, putting together these clothes for kids. And then how are you getting out there?
I used to do a lot of markets. So a lot of outdoor street markets and fairs and things like that.
And you bring your wares.
Right. I would bring my wares and unpack them out my suitcase and lay them out and hang them on a little mannequin and little things like that. And that, you know, that began to grow and develop. I feel like I got a lot of support because I was fairly young doing that. So, you know, to be young. And also people will always ask me, like, did you go to school? Because you're kind of young. Like, did you go to school for this or
what's kind of young, Nyla?
Well, when I was doing the children's line, that was – I was probably about maybe 16.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is 16. Young.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I'm going to markets. But I was doing jewelry prior to that, and I was 7. So I kind of had, like, a work ethic in my mind even at 16, where that could be a little odd. But
well, I think 7's a little odd, too. 16 makes you sound like an old lady.
I know. I've always been, like, creative. It's just in my bones. And I'm happy that I had parents that – really drove that and put me in those environments. Because at 7, even at 16, I wouldn't know where to go or have the confidence to interact with people and engage adults and make sales and all these type of things. But, you know, I felt comfortable and confident about it. And I always kept, you know, my books really organized and my swatches. Different things. Oh, it's available in 5 colors. And these are the colors and the price points.
That's nuts.
Right?
But that's good nuts.
I know. Yeah, exactly. So just doing that for a number of years and just continuously elevating and trying to get into different creative areas is kind of what had gotten me to the point of my clothing line, which is Amer Creations, which developed from the children's line. So now I focus on an adult line.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some clients where I make pieces for children still, but I'm now moved to designing pieces for women. And it's still all female line.
It's important, I think, if you don't mind, that we tell people how old you are.
I'm 29.
Because that's young.
I know. But then again, it's still young.
It's still young.
I know.
I mean, it's very impressive.
Thank you.
I mean, but then to think that I've been in this business for 22 years because I started when I was 7.
Oh,
it's
man.
So how did you give birth to Amira Creations?
Amira Creations.
And what does Amira mean?
Amira means inner beauty.
Okay.
It's an Arabic name. And I wanted to have a name that spoke more about the inner part of someone because I feel like to really embrace a lot of the things that I do, which is like bold and colorful and things, you have to be like internally confident to carry that off. Otherwise, people can read that you don't really feel comfortable with what you're wearing or what you're doing. So I wanted a name that matched that and that said something about beauty, but it wasn't the external, you know, because in this industry, it becomes very superficial and materialistic and that's not really my focus on it. I mean, things can be looked at that way, but that's not my intentions behind it. I want to bring out your confidence and, you know, you feeling like, you know, I can be modest. I can show a little bit. But, I mean, if you're not Muslim, if you're just a modest dressing, you know, woman, you can show some, but you still want to, you know, leave a little bit to the imagination. And those are the type of things that I wanted to kind of get across. So that's the name. And my sister actually helped me come up with the name. I told her kind of what I wanted, and she looked into some different Arabic names because I wanted an Arabic name to draw back a correlation to the fact that I am Muslim. And that was, like, the perfect name. And that was actually from when I was 7 with my jewelry line. And I've kept the name.
That's
yes.
interesting.
And over the years, it just still fit. Like, it fit with my jewelry line.
Well, it's also a very pretty name.
Thank you,
Amira
yes.
is a great name, and it's not particularly common.
Although right.
You could have done Nyla Limus mm-hmm. Creations because there's nobody else but you.
Right.
But this,
I like Amira. It's over the years, I've wanted to continue to keep it because I feel like it has a ring. The meaning behind it is great. It has, you know, a good history that goes back to, you know, when I was younger and me still being creative. And I like the fact that it's Amira. It's kind of like a twist on
the word,
on
mirror.
The word, right? Like mm-hmm. you're looking into Amira.
Where'd you get seed money? I mean, if there's somebody who's not 7 listening to this show, but
right.
who's a young woman or a contemporary of yours, how did
a lot
you
of
explain
it, a
how
lot
you...
of it was family.
Who supported you financially?
Yes.
Okay.
Both parents supported me financially. And then I would, you know, I was taught to have like my savings account and different things like that. So when I go to these events and I make some money, even if it's $30 or $100 or whatever, you know, I'm putting that there. So now I can also dig into my own little profit stash. But it was a lot of family funded and friends who felt like I could go somewhere with this. So they'd put a little money into it. Or from birthdays, they'd put, okay, this is a little something for you. We'll put that to the side for the business and things like that. So family and friends is really where the seed money came from initially.
And then at some point, you had to hire other people, did you not?
Yes. I did have to hire other people. And bringing on someone else, well, a few other people to work with the company was actually fairly recently, maybe like the last 3 years. I've had an intern. I've had an assistant. But as far as having to really pay out and, you know, really handle finances a little differently, that's been like the last 3 years. I had to pull on a seamstress. I'd like to meet orders for boutiques and for Fashion Week to meet deadlines and different things like that. And now that I have the agency as well with Under Wraps Agency, you know, doing photo shoots with my girls, sometimes I'll provide different garments for them to wear depending on what the shoot is, or hire a hijab stylist to accompany them on a photo shoot or something. So it makes the concept a little more acceptable to the client. Like, you know, we like the hijab idea, but they may not know how to do it, or they might see this funky thing they like but don't really know how to do it. So I try to basically have someone to come along with the model to provide that service, just to make it a little bit easier.
So you're not only designing hijabs, you're also designing dresses.
Garments, pants, you tops,
kind of
dresses,
cover,
a little
you
bit
cover
of everything.
The, okay, yes. The spectrum. So your designs appeal to both Muslim and non-Muslim women. That was always your goal?
That was always my goal. I never wanted to be blocked into just a certain like title, like the Muslim designer, or, you know, that's nice stuff for a Muslim girl. Like, I just wanted to be in the industry accepted as a fashion designer, not any type of religious association or anything. As much as I definitely welcome any questions, or I speak very highly of the fact that I am Muslim. It's not a secret, but I don't want to be known in that type of category.
Stereotyped or
right,
boxed.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So I always wanted to, even when I did photo shoots, I would do photo shoots, and I still do, with secular models. You know, get models from Ford or Wilhelmina or whatever the case may be, to show that, you know, this is a piece designed by a Muslim woman, but this is a transitional piece. And when I say transitional piece, they're garments that can be layered and made more modest. And that's how I dress. So my line is a reflection of how I dress. I wear strapless dresses. I wear halter dresses. I wear things like that, but I wear a blazer on top of it. You wouldn't see the V-neck and the plunge of the halter, or you wouldn't see the fact that my shoulders are bare because I may have a shirt under or whatever the case may be. Even my outfit today, I know we can't see it, but, you know, it's a high-waisted skirt and it's a shirt tucked in, and the shirt is fairly fitted, but the way my hijab is wrapped, you can't see, like, my bust and things of that nature. So I've always, creatively, that's how I've always dressed. So when I did a line, naturally, that's what went into my line.
I have seen some of your designs, and there's a photograph that I'm looking at of you with some of your models, four of whom are exposed. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the strapless.
Arms out.
Yeah, and arms out. And so that's an example of transition. Someone who is a lot more modest could drape
a little
really,
shawl.
I was going to say shawl,
right.
But whatever. And so from kind of the neck down with arms covered, hands exposed.
And even with those pieces, it's really just to – a lot of my mindset with my company, which is why I said the 20s to the 50s.
Yes.
That was an era where – and even kind of predating that, but with that era, fashion-wise, I'm attracted to that era. And that was a time when it didn't really have anything to do with your religious beliefs. Women just kind of dressed a certain way. And I feel like it was a modest way of dressing. You
for
know,
sure.
It was maybe high-waisted skirt with, you know, poodle skirt with a fitted top. But it was still covering. It was a long-sleeve top or, you know, gloves and all these things. And I just really like that. I admire that. And I feel like a lot of, you know, editorials and things, they tend to go to those eras as references for, like, real true fashion. And with that being said, I just kind of want to get back to that. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Muslim mission or you have to dress like a Muslim or anything like that. It's just, you know, being modest women. I just feel like we've kind of lost a little bit of that.
Is it hard to be in two different spheres?
I don't find it to be difficult because I make an effort to clearly describe that I'm not suggesting that Muslim women should wear the pieces as is. So that's like my main concern, is I don't want people to misunderstand when they see some of my garments, or they may see it on a secular model. They sometimes get it a little fused. Like, okay, she has a Muslim modeling agency, but then she has like a Muslim model wearing a dress with no sleeves. And it's like, that's not a Muslim model.
Right.
That's, you know, that's a model who's in the existing, you know, secular industry. And they are supportive of what I'm doing with my line. They love my pieces. And this was a photo shoot where they contacted me and they asked me, can we use some of your garments? And I let the stylist pull the pieces and use the garments. But it's still a modest silhouette in comparison to a lot of the garments that are out today for the woman who is not Muslim or does not have those guidelines to dress. Because that also goes from Muslim to Jewish women.
I was just going to bring that up. Would Orthodox women be interested in your fashions? Do you sell to them? Do you know?
I've sold directly that I know of. I've sold to maybe like three Orthodox Jewish women. And there's actually one woman who I'm speaking to in regards to possibly joining the agency. So I'm very excited about that. Of course, there are dress codes with the skirt reaching a certain length and things of that nature. There's also a Catholic model who I'm looking at working with now. It's been growing more. And as they see that I really do stick with as close to the guidelines as possible while still being accepted into this business, it's drawing more attention from other faith-based individuals that may not have the same faith as mine, but they do respect and see how I make sure my models are taken care of. So it's opening the doors for them to want to work with me. And that was the point of the agency, is really to educate through the agency and break down stereotypes and show that, you know, people from different beliefs and different backgrounds, we can all come together, we can all work together for the common dream that you want to be a model. You know, this is something you want to do, then.
That you're not shut out because of your religious beliefs.
Exactly.
So talk to me about Under Wraps. Did you just wake up one day and say, come on, enough?
Under Wraps.
What's the genesis of that name?
Oh, Lord. Okay. Under Wraps Agency was a baby in the making for a very long time. There's a lot of different areas that I work in the fashion industry. So I do have Amira Creations. I'm the creative, you know, director behind it, the designer, the seamstress. I mean, now I have another person who works with me. But for a number of years, it was basically a one-woman show, just kind of doing everything.
Are you making money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. it's getting better and better every time. But, yes, okay. I'm able to sustain. So that is good. And in the beginning of Amira Creations, there were other jobs that I was doing. So I would work as a tailor with some companies. I would work during Fashion Week with another company called Ground Crew. I would work with them work with Waldorf Astoria, with the Bridal Week, like all these different areas. And it allowed me to be behind the scenes and see a lot of what, you know, goes on and how these models, how they're treated and how they treat themselves and how they don't eat, you know, different. Then that's not every model, but you see a lot of what goes on behind the scenes. And in seeing that, I really felt like the models lose sense of the fact that they're women. Like, this just kind of becomes like
a commodity.
I guess I could say like a commodity. It's almost like
there's no
they're not outspoken. They feel as though if we say something back to a client, or if we don't feel comfortable wearing something, or, you know, I'll lose my pay, or my agent will be upset with me, or they'll drop me, or things of this nature. And to an extent,
so you're invisible, but you're really not, because you're beautiful. You know,
right? Yeah. Exactly.
It's shut up and be beautiful.
Exactly. Exactly. And even with the you know, with a lot of the mimicking a lot of the European size guidelines here and all the dietary and weight, you know, requirements, a lot of the women lose sense of what makes you feel like a woman. In a sense that when you're getting older, you're developing more, you're getting more busty, things of this nature. And they don't want that in some of the size stipulations. And, I mean, I can only imagine. I've spoken to some models, but I can only imagine how you feel that you're a grown woman, but your body is almost that of like a teenage boy, you know? So different things like that are things that I've seen. And I'm kind of like, I feel like they're losing sense that they're women, you know? And if you don't feel comfortable as a woman with something, there's nothing wrong with expressing it. There's a way to do it and, you know, proper order of operations. If you are a model, you need to say something to your agent. But then you have to have an agent who's going to speak for you. And sometimes that doesn't happen. The agent says, well, you're a model. You're to be seen, not heard. You just go do what the client wants. If they want you to wear a bikini and you don't feel right about a bikini, then maybe this isn't the job for you.
Exactly.
Like, you know, and these are the type of, I've heard these conversations. I've seen these conversations. I've seen models in the corner crying because they're conflicted, or their moms, and I don't really want to be depicted that way. My kid may see this one day. Look, do you want the job? Do you not? You know, these are the type of things that I've seen, and I'm like, that doesn't sit well with me. So I really, that was a lot of what drove me to want to start the agency. And then also a lot of startup models, when I look at their comp cards, you know, they've come to me to want to work with me with Amira Creations. And sometimes a lot of startup girls, when you see their comp cards or their lookbook, it's a bit raunchy. And it's not because they wanted to do pictures like that. It's because they thought that's what they had to do to get into the business. So from that aspect as well, it was like, I kind of want to get in here and kind of
show
them.
Get my foot
in
the door.
Yeah, show them. You don't have to do that. And I've been a hijabi. I've covered my hair from, I was born and raised Muslim. So I've always covered. And from a young age, like I said, my parents did implement that and kind of make it an easier process. But, and I'm not saying that everyone has to be Muslim and wear hijab or anything like that. But I say that to say I've always covered my hair and I've always been received very well in this business. And I switch it up. I wear sometimes it's in a bun, sometimes it's down. I change up the way that I do it. But my garments have always been modest.
Although very colorful.
Oh, very colorful, yeah, very bold. I've worked with commercials, music videos as the lead stylist where there's six people under me and I'm delegating what needs to be done. And it's like, you know, when you have a talent and a gift, you can tweak it in a way where people will still take to it. You just have to know, like, how to do it. And I feel like a lot of these girls that kind of come into the business and they come at a young age, they don't feel like they can have a say-so in anything. And when you become a seasoned model, like Naomi Campbell and Chanel and Iman and all these, you know, different type of models, Giselle, they have guidelines. They have stipulations. I mean, they've gotten to that point, but they had agents along the time where when you look at their model catalog, you're not going to see certain things from them because they had an agent who represented them in a light that said, as you build, as you grow, when people look back at what you did, it still speaks highly of you. And I feel like a lot of these models that start out now, they don't have things that would necessarily speak highly of them. Or when they presented a higher-end designer or someone, they would be a little hesitant to work with them because it's like, you know, what kind of things have you been doing? Or how did someone talk you into doing that, you know, quote-unquote artistic nude photo shoot, but there's nothing artistic. You know, it's just naked and, you know,
gotcha.
Things of that nature. So these were a lot of the driving forces behind.
Going through your mind.
Mm-hmm, wanting to start Under Wraps Agency. And then the Muslim part, because that was just, I wanted to address the modesty. That was initially what came into my mind. And women really losing sense of who they are in this business. But the Muslim part was because I'm Muslim. And I'm a strong believer in taking care of your own before you kind of branch out and take care of everyone else. And I know even some friends of mine that are Muslim women that have what it takes. They have the height, they have the look, they have the shape, the body, everything, yet, you know, they wear hijab. Or some don't wear hijab, but they're not willing to do maybe bikini shots or short skirts or things of that nature. And it's like a dream deferred. Like, oh, I really wanted to be a model. Everyone tells me I have the look, but I need to take my scarf off, or I have the look, but I'm going to have to, you know, not be so covered. And, you know, they don't want to compromise that, so they don't do it. And I'm like, that's kind of sad. Like,
sure.
Why should that have to be the case? And I know there's other women that aren't Muslim that have the same issue. You know, there's Jewish women. There's, you know, devout Catholic or just Christian women. There's Rastafarian women that, you know, that probably have heard the same story. And it's like, why is that the case? You know, Hindu, I'm sure. Yes.
But I just want to say one thing also. There are not very many African-American models, period.
Yes, that's very
true. I mean, that's
true.
A whole other issue.
That's a whole nother, yeah, exactly.
Well, how did you get your women in the first place? Did you put an ad out?
I did do several castings where I mentioned the concept. And
were you overrun?
What I found was it was received well, but I took a break from doing the castings and I did a photo shoot to show what I'm looking for. Because with Islam, everyone, like any religion, implements it to their life differently. So some women, for example, they don't wear makeup. They don't feel like that's Islamically something that we should do. They don't wear bright colors because they feel like that draws attention. They don't wear heels. So what I found was in doing the castings, I got women who were like, oh, I want to model, but I'm not going to wear makeup. Or I want, and it's like, that kind of goes with modeling. So I said, okay, because, and there are a lot of newbies. They don't really know. So they're like, oh, I want to do it. You're saying you're looking for Muslim models, you know, but I'm not going to wear heels. I'm wearing flats. I was like, what runway are you going down with flats? So I said, let me take a break from these castings and do a photo shoot. I did it with a secular model. She wasn't Muslim, but I dressed her Islamically. I did a hijab and all these different things and makeup, bold makeup and all these things to then do a new casting where you can see what I'm looking for. And that pulled in more women that were more so what I'm looking for. And I have a small roster of women now because although this is a modeling agency, because it is the first Muslim modeling agency and because it's really trying to merge the secular business with a faith, there's a lot of politics that kind of play a role in it. And every model or every woman who wants to be a model is not built for that. So that's why I have to be very selective as to who I bring on in the beginning. Once they kind of establish things and they're able to handle themselves in the interview and things of that nature, then it'll be easier for other models to come on board. But I just have to be very careful and cautious, which is why my roster now is fairly small. And I work with other models and I work with other Muslim models, but they're not signed with the agency because I just don't feel like they're ready to handle even someone questioning your religion behind it. It's happened to all my models. It happened to me. Oh, you're a real Muslim because you're doing fashion and you're flaunting yourself in front of men on the runway. And everybody has different beliefs. So
you really
have
to break down a lot of stereotypes, don't you? In addition to, this is just what I want to do, but at the same time, you have to educate people.
It's a lot. It's definitely a lot. And by no means am I the go-to. I represent all the Muslims in the world. I have things I have to work on, too. I'm human. So, you know, that's not it. But I do know how people's minds think. And if they see me, it's just kind of like an association. They're like, well, she's Muslim and she does that. That's just what people do. So, you know, with knowing that, I explain all these things to my models. You know, if you, you know, don't wear your hijab all the time, when we sign our, you know, contract, you need to let me know that. Don't say you wear your hijab all the time and then, you know, they see you at some event somewhere, your hair's not covered, and then they're like, oh, well, Under Wraps says they work with Muslim models who wear hijab, and in all actuality, their models aren't even covering, you know? So people try to taint things. So that's why I just like to be very clear. And wearing the head covering, I just want to touch on that. I make it a stipulation within the agency, if you're one of my Muslim models, only to break down the stereotypes of wearing a hijab. Covering your hair does not make you a Muslim. So a lot of times, especially those who don't really know about hijab or they're learning on what is that scarf about, they may think, oh, if you wear that, you got to be Muslim. And there's a lot of Muslims that don't wear it. So that doesn't make you a Muslim. Your character, your demeanor, how you interact with people, being a pleasant individual, not backbiting. Like, there's so many other things in how you operate that make you Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not it. But what I do know is that there's a lot of negative misunderstandings and stereotypes associated with the hijab. It's become this scary, you know,
repressive piece of clothing.
Yes, exactly. And that's so far from what it is, which is why I do make it mandatory. For now, I don't know if things will change. I feel like it would stay, but as time grows, things grow. But right now, I want that to be something else that we can break down as what's been stereotyped as something very negative to being positive and even becoming fashion forward. I mean, even now, a lot of stylists and just designers in stores, they got all these turban wraps and all these type of things. Like, it's happening. They look at it and they see something in it. It just has to be done in a way where it's relatable to people. And sometimes what you see, like, just black and just pinned at the neck, and that's fine for those who wear it, but it's not relatable for others who are not Muslim. And it becomes like, well, what's that about? Or it's too mysterious, or, you know, what's happening? And it's really just how the person decides to cover. It's not anything more than that, but, you know.
But your hijabs cover the head completely.
Yes.
It's not that it's some kind of
like headpiece or
headpiece,
something.
Headpiece, exactly.
I design headpieces as well, but the hijab is to cover the whole hair. Yes.
Okay. How do you feel about when you look back over this year with Under Wraps? You feel like you're at a good place? And also, I mean, talk about the timing to do it during New York Fashion Week. It couldn't be better, for heaven's sake.
I feel like we've made a lot of progress. We've gotten a lot of media and press. I must also acknowledge that a lot of that has come from my publicist, Tamara Walker. She's excellent. And although I'm talking now, like, this is kind of like my zone, so I'm kind of in a buzz, but I'm usually quite quiet. It's like, I'll go to an event and no one would know that I made what I had on or that I'm the CEO.
As creative as you are.
Right. No one would know. And that Tamara really talks it up and, you know, she pitches me really well to people. And, you know, it's a blessing that I have the credentials to back it. But I'm just not really super outspoken like that. So she's gotten, I say that to say she's gotten us a lot of this press because she does my PR for Amira Creations as well as Under Wraps Agency. And I spoke to her about the conception of the agency and she felt like it was a good idea. She just wanted to know how is I really going to merge it to the secular world, like how do you think they're going to take to it? And I said, I'm just going to be my creative self. And I mean, it's called being a pioneer. Either they take to it or they don't.
Are you where you want to be?
I'm on the road to where I want to be. I'm not 100% where I want to be. I want to have more girls on the roster. I want to definitely internationally get the girls into shows in, you know, Paris and Japan, you know, all over. I wanted to...
You want to go global.
I definitely want to go global. And it has potential to do that because Islam, and then with this Modest Women, period. But I say Islam because Islam is a universal religion. So, and a lot of these, the quote-unquote exotic models that everyone wants, a lot of them live in these Muslim countries. I have, you know, Somalian women that want to join the agency and Malaysian, Indonesian, where else are we? UK is huge. There's a lot of women there. And a lot of these areas are the places where that's like an agent's dream place to get a model. But a lot of them are Muslim, and they're not going to do that, you know? So this is like the perfect merge for them where I can get those girls that are the girls that everyone wants to have. So I feel like it definitely has the ability to do that. It's just, you know, I'm still a start out. So at this point, it's just getting that financial backing to be able to expand it to that level. But the demand is there. We've gotten contacted regarding Dubai Fashion Week. That was actually last year when we launched. And I passed on it because I didn't have girls. Like, I just opened the agency. I had like one model.
But
like,
call me later.
Yeah, hello. Yes. Yeah. They are right here in the front of the call roster. Mm-hmm. And Indonesia Fashion Week, they've expressed some interest where, God willing, we'll be traveling there soon. That's kind of in the talks. But these are all places that are very interested in bringing to the table, you know, me coming and bringing my girls. And it's one area or the other. It's either interested in the girls or interested in both the girls and Amira Creations, or just Amira Creations because, I am Muslim, but I have a different aesthetic to, I guess, the way I do things. I guess I'll say that. And they like that.
Well, I like the fact that you made a stop here along your way to great success.
Thank
it was
you
really
so
a pleasure
much.
To meet you, Nala.
Thank you.
I'm very excited for you, and keep us posted.
I will definitely do
as,
so.
As how everything takes off or continues to take off.
Yes, I will.
Thank you so much for coming. I'm Sandy Klein. Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. And remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show and like us on Facebook at the 51%.